Hello, everybody, and welcome.
Welcome back.
Yeah,
another week in the hot seat.
Is it? It's Dan and Tom here, back giving you all the good stuff in your ears, hopefully.
As always, that's the only stuff I like to deliver.
That is it. Well,
first on the agenda, sir.
First on the agenda, we're going to not dilly-dally this week. We're going to jump straight into it. And once again, we're going to stick topical. We're going to cover our two teams first because that is just what we like to do. I'm going to start with my team, Arsenal. We were away this week at Stoke City. Arsenal again, another draw, another 0-0.
Yeah, boring, isn't it?
Yes and no. Obviously, no goals is never a good sign going like that you're scoring. But from Arsenal's point of view, especially against a team like Stoke, no goals going in is equally as impressive.
Yeah, you're usually quite susceptible to them at set pieces.
Yes, I mean, Arsene Wenger has opted with Diaby. He's already played all the games this season, which is rare for him to play more than one game after another.
Some say he's better than Alex Song.
Well, some are wrong.
Are wrong.
Maybe, definitely at this point in time. But, yeah, Arsenal 0-0. Not bad. Not excellent. But it is just going to take, it's a matter of time, I think, before this Arsenal team clicks into gear.
Yeah, I think a lot of new signings all in sort of forward positions. It might take
at the
a
back,
while
at
to
the back
gel.
Looks fairly okay.
Yeah,
I mean, we've still got, I mean, Jenkinson's playing and surprisingly isn't actually doing bad, which I'm...
Yeah, I'm very surprised about because the last time I saw him play, he looked like a child.
Was this time last year, this very day, that Arsenal...
scored the own goal.
No, that was in pre-season.
Was that pre-season?
But it was
ridiculous thing,
when
yeah.
he played, when it was this time last year, this very day that Arsenal lost 8-2 to Manchester United. A stinging, stinging defeat.
Still in the memory,
eh? Oh, definitely. But yeah, Cazorla still looked good. Podolski and Giroud both looked fitter. I was impressed with Podolski's physicality. He actually handled Stoke's defence really well. Like, they were not bullying him at all. He was... putting them on their asses, which I was quite happy about. So, all in all, good
I was impressed
Arsenal.
With Giroud's audacity to try out.
Oh, it was excellent.
Lob from 30 yards on the sprint. That was very
that
nice.
Was really
nice
good.
To see. Even though I don't think he missed by that much, but it was pretty decent effort.
It was a really good effort. Everyone's trying to play it out like he was square, like Ramsey was square for the easy ball and he went for an audacious lob.
Even if Ramsey was square for the easy ball, Ramsey would have fucked it up. Don't worry about it. Giroud, if that had gone in, everyone would have just been sucking him off for about
that,
the next
that
six
would have
months.
Been it. Arsenal knew what they were doing. Mm-hmm. It's just going to take a little bit of time for him to adapt.
Course.
I know when Thierry Henry came to Arsenal, his first, I think, 10 games, he didn't get off the mark for 10 games, didn't really look the shadow of the man that he became. I know it's not the same sort of situation as with Robert Pirlo's poor first season. Everyone expects instant impacts from these guys. And, you know, when you pay a certain amount of money, fans probably expect it, but you just have to allow time to embed. Arsenal haven't had pretty much any pre-season games. They scrapped a lot of what is their standards games pre-season. Mm. They didn't have their usual one with Barnett. That link is now terminated, if I understand correctly.
Football manager talk there, sir.
But... yeah, I'm pretty pleased. It will take a little bit of time for Arsenal, but
I think a draw away to Stoke's decent. I mean, I don't think any of the top four last year won away to Stoke. Anyway,
Stoke had a really, really good record against the bigger clubs, as we would have to dub them, which I'm not a big fan of saying it, but you know
they are bigger. I guess moving on
to another big club,
probably the biggest club in London, Tottenham Hotspur.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Again, quite similar, actually. You know, we drew 1-1. Not a result you necessarily want when you're playing at home to West Brom. But again, it's not so much new signings as a new philosophy of football. Obviously, there are some new signings there, but really, it's the style
it's
of play.
More the system rather than the players. And you haven't shaken too much up.
No, we haven't shaken too much up. You know, and you could say, we bring Adebayor back in. It's technically his second season at the club. Like, just is.
Well, he's familiar with all his players.
Yeah, but at the same time, he hasn't had a pre-season at all at Man City.
He hasn't
so
probably just had a couple of training sessions with his new manager.
Yeah, so for him to come on, I mean, it was a case of classic Tottenham Hotspur. Really, I mean. I was, again, really happy with how we set up, how we pressed, how we played sort of possession football, and we absolutely dominated the match apart from sort of 10 minutes where we went looking for a goal and then they sort of hit us on the counter a few times. But again, it was just classic Spurs, go a goal up at home in the last 10 minutes and then absolutely shit yourselves. I mean,
that last 10 minutes looked absolutely agonising. Yeah, the balls were getting cleared off the line.
It's been happening ever since I've been a Spurs fan and been watching Spurs. I can guarantee you, you know, I sit there week in, week out, and it's a depressing thing to say, and luckily I haven't had to say it as much the past few seasons, but I just go, all right, yeah, we're definitely going to concede here. We're definitely going to concede here, and it's just that, again, I don't know why we have that mentality where we don't seem to be able to hold on to a lead, but hopefully it's something that won't hang around too long. I was impressed by Vertonghen. I've heard sort of really mixed things from, you know, people who are at the game, people on Twitter. Some really impressed with him, some was like, oh, he's completely useless. I was very impressed from what I saw. I mean, looked so comfortable on the ball. Early on, had a chance to score after he sort of like
volley.
Started off a move and then just exchanged a few passes along the way. You know, I like a defender who's comfortable on the ball. Who doesn't?
There is nothing better than a ball playing defender.
Of course, yeah. So I was happy with him. The only thing I was a little bit wary of is there's a bit of shirt pulling going on throughout the game, from his point. And at one point, just before they scored the goal, actually, I don't know if you saw it, there was like a really big tussle with him and a West Brom player. And first he got thrown to the ground, then he got up, and like the next time a cross came over, threw the guy to the ground. And it was a bit ridiculous. And, you know, from the West Brom attacker's point of view, what the worst is going to happen, you're giving away a free kick. Yeah. From Vertonghen's point of view, he's giving away a penalty. So I was a little bit wary about that. But in general, very impressed by him. All good, I think.
All good. Really. So both clubs haven't got maximum points, what obviously we both would have wanted, but very, very positive. And with a couple of days left, I'm sure both teams may be seeing a
If Spurs beat Norwich next week, then we'll have taken, I think, I'm pretty sure we'll have taken the same points from these three fixtures as last season.
Okay.
Because we drew at home to Norwich. So if we can... If we can beat Norwich, then it, you know, obviously it doesn't even out exactly, but, and I think we will beat Norwich.
Shall we touch Man United?
Yeah, impressive going forward, obviously. Again, they looked frail to me, whether it's a holding midfielder or centre-back partnership, to me.
I think it's both. I generally think that whole central block.
Yeah.
If you haven't got that in your team, you're going to be susceptible. And
yeah,
as great a game as Raphael had, when you have a defender attacking so much,
yeah, of course, you're left exposed.
You are left exposed, and as with Evra, I've never been a fan of his, and I'm sure many people will like to argue with me until the cows come home. But I'll happily sit there and say, I think he isn't as excellent as everyone thinks.
I think he's overrated defensively. I think there are quite a few United fans who are starting to recognise that as well and understand that competition is
when you start getting caught out and when goals start becoming indirectly your fault, in the sense that you're still on the halfway line and you've got the winger that's running right down your wing and you're just hoping the leggy Scholes or Giggs are going to come and track your path.
But to me, the best player in Fulham United game was Dembele by a country mile.
He
completely
really,
ran
really
the show from
game.
Fulham's point of view, and even like really late on, he beat two men to get that ball
running
in.
Running everywhere.
And that, you know, as Fellaini did to them, you know, from Everton's point of view, did to United the previous week, it just seems that if you can play someone sort of in that hole who's a strong physical player, then you're going to cause them problems. And if Dempsey had been playing, I think, United would have been in real trouble, because I just think, not necessarily that, you know, he would have done
just more
much
of a
to change
physical threat, you mean?
Maybe, but I think just a better finisher was what they needed. There are a few chances that fell to the wrong people.
I mean,
they did create chances for them, they just have anyone to put them away.
And they had that, I'd say it was an instinctive reaction where the ball hit his foot and then...
Yeah, and flew up onto
the bar. I mean... Any other day, that could just hit the roof of the net.
Yeah, of course,
kind of thing.
Of course.
And, you know, it's unlucky from the goalkeeper. But Fulham, again, a really good showing. Really good showing from them.
Notoriously, they play very bad against Man United as well, especially at Old Trafford. So I think...
Past few years, they've been okay, though.
Yeah, but
they
think
snagged the win,
sort of
I think, two seasons ago.
That's sort of their, like, big thing, isn't it? So
I don't think anyone going to Man United are never going to have an easy. No one's got Man United away thinking, oh, that's all right. That's 3 points in the bag. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, but I think Fulham are impressive here.
But yeah, two debut goals from this Dutch guy and Kagawa.
What? Dutch guy? oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, Van Persie scored.
Rapey guy, yeah.
He scored an absolutely fantastic goal.
Lazy.
Yeah, you say lazy, I say...
So he was falling over and the ball, like, clipped off him, looped over into the far corner. No, it was a quality finish, of course.
It was absolutely fantastic, and that is what they signed him to do.
Yeah, I mean, I give him 2 weeks, and I've broken his leg, and everyone has forgotten about it, but I don't know about it.
Yeah, one point I wanted to bring up, I think, I imagine you may agree with me on this, do you think Rooney's injury is a blessing in disguise for Man United and Ferguson and everyone else involved in that way going forward? I'm not saying Rooney isn't a good player, because I think he is a decent footballer. I don't think he is. Once again, people put him upon... They put him on a pedestal. They put him on a level of world class.
They put him on Messi, Ronaldo level, and if you're actually being serious, he's nowhere near.
He's a good footballer. And he's on his day, he looked absolutely excellent, but it's the fact...
But at the moment, he looks about a stone overweight. And,
he really does look bad, in bad shape.
To me, I mean, I think the problem is that Rooney is sort of undroppable in the sense that he's held in such high regard by United fans, mainly because he's English. You know, that certainly helps.
Yeah.
That it's been the case in recent seasons where Ferguson can't drop him ever. Otherwise, it's like, oh my God, what are you doing? It's like the Messiah. And he did drop him for the Fulham game. Obviously, he only came on. And I think that was a really brave decision from Ferguson. One that obviously paid off. But I think Rooney's unfit from what I can see. And at the moment, I would definitely take Van Persie over Rooney in my starting 11. And I think that injury's going to help.
I genuinely would take Van Persie over Wayne Rooney. Not just today, but every day
of the week.
But,
yeah.
I mean, I know that is personal, and I do understand people say Rooney brings a lot to the team.
But at the moment, I don't see what Rooney's necessarily bringing to the team. I understand what he can bring to the team, but at the moment, I don't think he's doing it. And I think that injury is going to help Ferguson out a lot.
When you've got guys like Welbeck and Hernandez waiting in the wings, he's not, you know, he's good. He's healthy competition. But if I was... Hernandez especially, who is now their fourth choice striker.
Yeah,
and there's no secret about that because you know, and when Man United signed him and he started scoring, he was the best thing since sliced bread.
Especially
to Man United fans. Oh, wow, we've got the signing of the decade here and whatnot. And now, with Rooney being out, they can have Van Persie and they may be quite sporadic in choosing him. He might not start every week, although they might want to. They might actually bring a more rotation. I know Ferguson is very much like that. I know Neville was saying Fergie is one of those very much look to the future kind of managers.
Yeah, of course.
He's got the next 5 games planned.
Yeah.
And he'll sit down with his players and say, you're not playing week 4, but in week five, you're starting. And you know, Ashley Young started on the left.
Yeah.
And things like that, and he does keep them happy, and because he's such a big manager with such an excellent, excellent record...
Yeah, no one's going
to
question him.
You can't question him. I mean, I dread to think if a manager came in and tried to do that with any other large team...
Yeah. Well, you just saw what happened with Villas-Boas at Chelsea last year, you know, come in and tell John Terry or Frank Lampard that they dropped and it's the fucking fan. Really,
just no. No. Long story short, Belgium's running riot in the Premier League.
Yeah, absolutely spanking it. I mean, Hazard actually looks like the greatest footballer that's ever lived at the moment, but yeah.
He is looking like a great acquisition, which we're both not surprised about.
No, not at all, but I mean, if you count winning penalties as assists, he's got like 6 assists in 3 games.
Yeah,
or something like that, and even without them, I don't think
I was a bit displeased that his first goal was a penalty, though.
Yeah.
Just for the real.
But he's a great penalty taker. I think he scored 10 out of his last 10, yeah.
Yeah.
That's like Balotelli.
Watch out.
A very cool penalty taker as well, like slow run up, smashes it bottom corner, very confident in his own abilities. But yeah, I think he's, in the past 3 seasons, he's won more penalties than anyone else in the top leagues and also has a 100% scoring record. So,
in few words, he's an absolute nightmare to play against.
Yeah, and then obviously assisted for the Torres goal as well. So,
yes.
Yeah, great player. But
Liverpool, Manchester City, the big game of the weekend.
Probably the biggest game of the week, yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you count Liverpool as a big club anymore.
Ooh.
Hey. Angering the scouts.
Yeah, but Liverpool, Man City. Decent game.
Better game than I thought it was going to be, to be honest. I honestly thought, you know, Liverpool would just... I still don't think they're going to have a great season, but they were really unimpressive first week, and I thought Man City would turn them over, and they didn't, to be fair
City
to them.
City have been a bit shaky.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I don't... This 3-5-2 that City have brought in, I really was really, really looking forward to. I thought it was going to change... Wasn't to say change the game, but you know,
but so it's something that doesn't happen in England anymore. It's,
you know,
like
when
the
4-3-3 was brought in,
yeah,
way back when, or when Wenger brought in the dynamic 4-4-2, certain things just changed the way football was not perceived, but the way people approached it. And a 3-5-2 would be considered suicidal, if anything. But with a team like City, the way the ideology of it, anyway, is that when you're attacking, like...
Everyone's attacking, I guess.
Yeah. Someone like... If you've got Gareth Barry in, I'm not saying he should be doing this, but if they did have Gareth Barry in, when everyone's pushing on, so, for example, you may play Clichy or Kolarov on the left flank and Zabaleta or Richards on the right, or Milner, as is now used in this 3-5-2, when you're attacking, let them roam free and have a holding midfield that will just slide in and just cover the two defenders. So, if, you know, if the break is on, you should have your wingers or your wing backs absolutely burning.
But is that not the problem? Like, I don't think City did that enough.
No, they didn't.
Liverpool.
But
yeah,
that was
that's
the problem.
What they should do.
The ideology of that is a very fluid formation, like the 4-3-3. When you're attacking, you've got three attackers, loose midfielders everywhere. When you're defending, you've basically got a compact midfield of five. What people mistake is they play three strikers in that formation, and you play a 4-3-3. You don't actually play. There's no dynamism in it.
And but I think that role as like a wing back in a 3-5-2, you know, you've got to work.
Oh, you have to
so
be an absolute engine.
To,
but because Man City have four or five players that can play that role.
Yeah, they could do it, yeah, with
and
rotation.
They have to rotate anyway just to keep everybody happy. But like I was saying, Clichy and Kolarov both being able to play that position with Zabaleta, Richards, and Milner being able to play on the other side is feasible. And you don't have to play it every week. It's just nice to know that.
Of course.
You could even switch it up mid game.
I was surprised to see them play it against Liverpool, actually. I mean, I know, obviously, they have been playing it, but against sort of like
you
a team with one striker,
you would imagine they
seem very odd.
But the 3-5-2 probably makes sense in that regard. If there is one striker playing, you're happy to just have three defenders.
And the other two act more as wide midfielders.
It's just,
okay.
Whereas if you've got two strikers against three defenders, that's probably not a position you want to be in. When you're defending, you actually ideally want to have twice as many. But that is just... You know, that's theoretical tactics. But in practice, you know, it didn't work like that.
No.
City were, I wouldn't say static in their formation, but there wasn't fluidity. I don't know if that's going to come in time. I don't know if it can be ingrained into them. But
I'm sure it can. I mean, I think, it's just a case of it's all very well to play it in pre-season, isn't it? To then try and play it away at Anfield in the Premier League is probably a different matter. You probably... As a player yourself, are more worried when you're as a wing back. You know you want to bomb forward, but at the same time, you're thinking if they hit us on the break and I'm not here,
I
look like a dick.
You've got to do essentially two players worth of work.
Yeah.
It really is. It is a workman's formation. You have to have players that are gonna, you know, ideally if someone had a Cafu in their team every day of the week, you play that. Well, you'd let
every
him
team
do
wants
that.
A Cafu,
oh, obviously, but I'm just picking the best names out of the hat, i.e. if you're saying, oh, I want a nice number 10, you're going to put in, you've got your selection.
Yeah.
But when it gets down to that, someone like Milner, who will put... he'll
he's
put,
a worker, isn't he?
He'll put that those 90 minutes, he'll run himself into the ground.
Yeah.
Whereas certain players, they'll be happy all day going forward and briskly
don't
make
really
their way back.
Don't really want to trot back, do they?
And a team like, when you're with Man City and you have your goalie like Joe Hart and you've got solid central defenders, you kind of get away with it.
Yeah, of course.
You do kind of get away with it. And that's what we were saying about Evra earlier on. When you bomb on, and you don't, and the other team doesn't score or don't make the most of it, it's
it goes unnoticed, doesn't it?
Arsenal suffered with Vermaelen. He often goes on pioneering runs. He just picks up the ball and will just go. Even if he hasn't got the ball, we'll keep going. Like Lucio used to do, like Luiz does. Terry's sometimes guilty of it. But it has to just be with discipline. You have to be really disciplined in football in general. But playing what is a risky formation, you're going to have to really do that. But actually back onto the game, City did... Lava lamp ahoy.
That's just my throwing a wild elbow into a lava lamp there. That's classic Tom Malone.
It finished in a draw and...
Yeah, courtesy of Martin Skirtle's back pass. Awful, but what can you do? Tevez again impressive for City, although as Reina, a whole they weren't.
Reina
but...
slightly unimpressive.
Reina, to me, has been unimpressive for about, you know, past sort of season and a half. But Tevez, you know, losing Aguero is a big blow, but if Tevez continues in the form he's in, then it might go unnoticed at the moment.
That is the thing. You lose arguably the best striker in the Premier League and you wouldn't know.
That's crazy. Moving on.
Villa Everton,
yeah. A good game. Well, not really a good game. A good game from Everton's point of view. Started very strongly in the league this season. I obviously tipped them for overachievers of the season.
I had Villa surprisingly as my overachievers, and so far under Lambert, I don't know what it is exactly that hasn't clicked yet. I don't know whether it is just the new manager trying to get used to it, or it is just a group of average players that are getting...
I think Lambert's a good manager, but it will just take some time. I think Villa do have the quality there, but it's a case of, after Alex McLeish being there as well, of sort of restoring confidence and convincing them that they can actually beat teams rather than just playing for a fucking draw every week.
Yeah, McLeish did not have the best of impacts on...
I think he's just like trying to just ruin football in the whole of Birmingham, really.
He secretly hates it.
Took City down, and now he's just trying to ruin Aston Villa. But yeah, I mean, Everton, I think for the past, obviously for the past few seasons, when they're in full flow, it's a great team to watch. You've got Baines bombing on, Fellaini there. Obviously, you had Cahill before. You know, their interplay can be great, but it's just a case of...
I think Everton have done it really well in the way that they, at one point, Cahill and Arteta looked just... They were not... I wouldn't say the team, but they were the linchpins.
Yeah.
And that is... They were the reasons why. They lost Arteta at the very end of last transfer window.
Yeah.
So, a year without him, it does take time to when you do lose a player like that. And then,
of course.
And they also lost Cahill, basically, because he didn't influence the games as he would have. And they decided to cut their ties.
But I think even when those two were there, I think Everton struggled to maintain that form on a consistent basis.
Yes.
They could play some games, you'd be like, bloody hell, they should be challenging Champions League the way they're playing.
Well, they did one year, didn't they?
Yeah, obviously they did, But it just didn't happen often enough. And obviously the classic with Everton is that they sort of don't start playing until the second half of the season. If they can play, you know, this well at the start of this season and carry it on,
hopefully,
you know,
they might.
They could be outside bet, you know, sort of Newcastle of last season. Probably not going to get Champions League, but could push it bloody close.
Yeah, but they'll have all the other teams up there sweating.
Yeah, of course. And the thing is they don't generally compete in other competitions.
Well, that's it. They can focus.
So they can just focus on the league. But interestingly, also, if they get a couple of injuries, you could see them being in real trouble. So we'll see. But yeah, it was another good few goals. Poor from Villa. Very poor from Shea Given on one of the goals.
The goalies...
I don't know what's going on with the keepers at the moment.
The goalkeepers in the Premier League already this season have had... just beyond the handful of shockers.
Well, people are trying to blame the ball, but I mean, I can't see it being the ball because it's the exact same ball that's used in Serie A. It's the same ball that's used in La Liga. There's no real complaints. It's not like sort of World Cup South Africa where the ball was flying all over the place and it was obvious. I don't see there being anything wrong with the ball. I just don't know what's going on with the keepers at the moment.
There's been some real absolute clangers. Federici's having probably, definitely a nightmare start to his Premier League. Yeah. Shea Given looked...
Rob Green back to his calamitous best.
Yeah, even Petr Cech, who had, at the end of last season...
And De Gea, obviously him and Vidic sort of clashed into each other.
I wouldn't blame the ball for that.
No.
At all. That was just...
that was awful.
He's a great shot stopper, but that command...
Yeah, of course.
But away from that, we have the last game we were going to briefly touch on was West Ham hosting... Swansea,
I think, were my outside tip for relegation. So, humble pie being eaten.
A whole load of it.
Too early, I think, to say that. I still, you know, stand by it that they could struggle at some point. But
they are looking very good at the minute.
Michu looks like a player for, what, 2 million or whatever, something tiny.
An absolute steal. And the fact that you signed La Liga's highest goal-scoring midfielder for anything less...
And apparently they're planning to bring in a few more Spanish players. They've obviously brought in Chico as well. And
it really is.
Laudrup seems to know what he's doing, which, fair enough, maybe I didn't give him enough credit for.
But yeah, I mean, I think West Ham are going to... I don't think they'll get relegated.
No, I think they'll be fine, but I was really surprised how poorly they've started, actually. Yeah. And again, it was, you know, an error. You know, we're talking about keeper's errors. You got Skirtle with a poor back pass. It was James Collins with an awful back pass that led to Meech's
goal.
That
was an absolute hospital goal.
Just under no pressure whatsoever, really. The thing with Skirtle's is, I saw Rodgers talking after the game, and he said Skirtle didn't have any options. No one was giving him a pass. So he could either try and pass back to the keeper, which he did and messed up, or hoof it long.
Yeah.
And Rodgers said that he's been... The whole point is he's trying to stop people from hoofing it along. So, you know, why I sort of sympathise with Skirtle there.
So he doesn't, I've just done what a gaffer's told me.
Yeah.
And okay, it hasn't come off the best way, but
Rodgers wasn't that annoyed about it.
Any
James
other year,
Collins, Sam Allardyce would be more than happy for you to smash that ball down the other end of the pitch. So if you're going to pass back to the keeper, you better bloody make sure
he gets there.
Just make sure he gets there. He wasn't under that much pressure. That was awful. There's been so many mistakes already in the first couple of weeks. Sort of half of me hopes it carries on and it's just hilarious every weekend.
But then,
the other half is like, I really just want to see the standard of defending and goalkeeping improved. You know, because at the moment it's like someone could win 4-0 and every single one could be an error.
Goalie's mistake. Or when the goalie lets in that goal for the first goal and it's an absolute massive mistake, your defenders lose faith in you. The goalie's head will drop.
And it could just go on from there.
Yeah, it could just go horribly wrong.
But yeah, I think, you know, some interesting results the first couple of weeks, but I always try and reserve judgment until maybe like 8 games in, really. You know what I mean? Spurs won't start playing until 2 weeks after the transfer window closes.
Once the window's closed, people can start forming
bonds
and whatnot. Everything will start to come together.
Yes.
So, speaking of that, do you want to have a little word about Modric? Obviously, he's finally gone.
Both
feet were out the door, but the suitcase was still in the doorway.
I mean, we knew it was happening. I got no hard feelings. Still, sort of best player I've ever seen in the flesh during my lifetime. He's gone for, I think, sort of roughly £30 million with add-ons.
Was that including add-ons? I thought it was in around the 23 mark with £7 million worth of add-ons.
No, I think that's what was originally reported. I thought it was nearer now just to the 30
plus
mark.
Add-ons.
With perhaps a little bit of add-ons, but I think it's roughly around 30. You know, I've heard about 8 different reports of what the actual fee is, but from
always undisclosed, aren't they?
From the Spanish end, I think current exchange rates, 29.6 million or something, but then I don't know if that's pre or post add-on. So I'm not really going to comment about the fee. I think it's a case of we could have got far more money if we'd have sold him to Chelsea or Man United, but then we'd have been selling him to Chelsea or Man United, and I'm more than happy to take a 10 million hit and not sell him to Chelsea, to be honest. I think I just wanted to sort of discuss briefly the partnership agreement.
That's come as a result.
I think
of
most
that,
people,
right?
Yeah, it's been picked up on. I'm sure most people have heard about it. We've sort of signed like a club partnership deal with Real Madrid. There's been a lot of pessimism from Spurs fans saying, "Oh well, that's it. Gareth Bale's off next year." Then, personally, I mean, perhaps I'm just sort of putting too much trust in Daniel Levy here. I don't think we'd do anything that stupid. To me, they might get a first refusal. I don't think it's guaranteed.
It's certainly not.
It's certainly not like an arranged transfer, but I'd be surprised. But I don't think necessarily that there's anything in place for senior player transfers there. I think from reading, you know, what's been written in the Spanish press or by the sort of the Spanish correspondents, Spurs have been looking for a commercial partner in Spain for about 5 years now. We've got a few. We've got San Jose Earthquakes in the US where we tour. We've got a link up with Internacional in Brazil. It's something that we try to press on with to sort of build ourselves up globally, you know, in the way that Man United have been doing for years, well, pushing yourselves.
That's the impression that I got. I thought, I know Spurs were in the US this summer, as were Real Madrid, and I know Real Madrid go and play bigger teams. They've had the game with AC Milan.
Yeah.
AC Milan's last game and Real Madrid's first game of their tour they're playing, and I kind of just got the presumption that it's going to be a very commercial deal in the sense that we'll play each other, it's going to be two decent teams, we'll go to America, have our pre-season there, and Premier League fans along with La Liga fans are going to be able to go and play, like go and watch these teams that obviously you can never watch, and seeing them play against each other
I think
excellent.
If it is a commercial link-up, then you know, there's no bigger team in the world than Real Madrid. You can argue Barcelona, I'd still say commercially Real Madrid are bigger to have. There's also, on top of the commercial side, I think that's set in stone. I think there will be, you know, every season a pre-season, whether it's in the US, it's most likely to be in the US,
is there a time frame on this deal, or is it just
from what I've heard, but I think how they work is it generally is maybe like a 5-year deal and then it can be renewed. But the more interesting side of it is, you know, reading about, I mean, the club statement was quite vague on it.
It was
brief. But from what I've read, again, sort of Spanish press from the Real Madrid end, there's sort of going to be like a coaching link up. Obviously, there's a relationship between Villas Boas and Mourinho from their time at Chelsea and then Inter. Apparently, they had a big fallout, but I'm not going to comment on that. That could be true or could not be. But yeah, apparently it's going to be a coaching link up, as in we can send our coaches over to Real Madrid probably during the off season to learn about sort of how they coach and coaching principles, vice versa, you know, because I think that's something Spurs are really interested in with this whole new huge academy and training ground we've opened up. We're looking to be at the forefront of coaching and developing our own players in sort of more of a Barcelona model than a Real Madrid model, bringing your own players through, nurturing them and reaping the benefits of that. But I think that's quite interesting. Whether it will lead to, I imagine it will lead to us perhaps getting some young players on loan from there. I know Mourinho is obviously a massive fan of the Premier League. Sahin, for instance, had offers from Germany and Turkey for loan moves as well. And Mourinho wouldn't even listen to them. You know, it was a case of you're going to a Premier League club, choose between Liverpool or Arsenal, because he knows how tough the Premier League is and how it can toughen up a player to then come back and play in La Liga. So I think it could be a case that we get some of their younger players to give them experience, which I'm happy with, to be honest. You know, I don't think you're then under any obligation to play them if it turns out they're shit, but if it turns out they're great and you get a season out of them, then
that's excellent.
Then fair enough. So, you know, from what I've read over here, very negative about it, as pretty much all press has been since Villas Boas took over.
And
I presume
in Spain it's been probably just glazed over.
It hasn't been a huge talking point in Spain, but from the people that have spoken about it seem to think that Spurs have got a very good deal and that this link-up is actually going to be very beneficial to us. Whether it will or not, we'll have to wait and see. I'm personally quite happy with the deal and also with the link-up. I think it could benefit us.
I see no harm in that.
No, not at all.
Being linked, if only commercially, to a club like Real Madrid, you're never going to lose money.
No, of course not. You know, you might even get the odd Real fan who watches the Premier League but doesn't have a team to support. Oh, well, I'll just support Spurs now.
That's it.
They both play in white and they're both linked up, so that's a few more shirt sales.
That's it.
Who knows? But yeah, no, I just thought I'd
give a quick
summary of what I'd heard.
That'd be good. That was good because people probably won't actually have a clue.
Well, I think, you know, there's been a lot of stuff written and it's like, oh, Levy's an idiot, blah, blah, blah. He's signed this deal. Spurs are going to lose all their best players to Real Madrid. It just doesn't happen like that in principle. I'm sorry, we've got a deal with Internacional. It doesn't necessarily mean that
you're signing every
signing Damião and Oscar because they went to Chelsea.
Yeah,
you know, it doesn't mean that at all. And I'd be very surprised if that happened. You know, Bale might end up at Real Madrid, but whether it's anything to do with this deal or not, I'd very be surprised.
I mean, either way, the two people dealing with the actual transfer from Tottenham's end and Real Madrid's end are going to have a relationship now.
Yeah, of course.
Whether they have this pre-arranged business deal or not, you know?
Yeah.
All that Tottenham need to know, if they ever are going to sell Bale, is that you're a team with money and you will pay a lot for my player and I want to sell him, and it's always a nice way to have it out. But we'll see that. We'll come to that bridge if we ever arrive. You never know. Bale could be could stay at Spurs for his entire career. Yeah, you never know.
Fingers crossed, never know. He could win the league. Who knows? It's a mad world.
Who does know?
Okay, sticking to the transfer news, I believe you've got a few things to round up.
I've got a few little things to talk about. Bojan is now a temporary AC Milan player on his semi-temporary...
no one's quite sure who he belongs to.
Just a quick summary of the Bojan deal. Roma signed Bojan when Luis Enrique joined Roma last year. From Barcelona, obviously. They paid £12 million to take him essentially on loan for two seasons. And Real Madrid, wrong Spanish side. Barcelona have essentially loaned him. And if they want him back, they will give Roma €13 million.
So they'll have basically given Roma €1 million
for a 2-year loan, basically. Yeah. But here's the funny thing. If Roma decide to keep Bojan, i.e. he has become what everyone thought he would be or will be, they have to pay another €16 million on top of the 12 already paid.
So €28 million.
Yes. To retain him.
Okay.
And I'm not sure exactly where Bojan sits in this whole deal, whether...
I'm sure he has absolutely no say in it whatsoever.
So, that is a crazy...
I assume if Roma don't want to keep him, even if Barcelona don't want him, they're sort of obliged to pay the 13, take him back, and then sell him on.
Yeah, because Barcelona, in essence, have paid £1 million and...
Here, we'll give you £1 million, give this guy some game time.
And I'm sure he will have earned more than £1 million in... Yeah. Or saved Barcelona more than £1 million in wages over 2 years. So, now, he's still I don't exactly know the workings, but he has just joined AC Milan on loan. Long story short, he's on loan for a year. And Massimiliano Allegri is AC Milan's manager. I don't know for how much longer, because that's a personal thing. I think he's going to get the chop soon.
Okay.
But he was very insistent he needed more firepower. So he's brought in Bojan, who didn't exactly
set the league alight, did he?
No, he could have had more opportunity, i.e. more starts. He got a lot of appearances, but a lot of them were sub-appearances. So his total in minutes is probably quite low. But his goals, I think he got 10 or 13 goals, which in Serie A is actually quite a decent amount. But
no one was really talking about him like Bojan. He was supposed to be the next big thing, wasn't he?
Yeah, put it this way. Roma have this guy and have just let him go to a direct rival. So they clearly don't value him too much. And AC Milan have also signed a young French man that was quite close to joining a few Premier Leagues, apparently, in the form of Niang.
Yeah.
He's only 17. AC Milan have paid for him, they've bought him. So now they have two strikers, as well as that Pazzini deal we spoke about last week. Yeah. So they're top heavy again.
Pato, they've also got Rubinho and Pato on top of those.
Yeah, but they're both injured. Pato's picked up his 16th different injury. Oh. Different injury, so not
it's a
saying...
shame, though, for him. You know, he's such a talent.
His goal-to-game ratio is... of what you would classify as a top draw striker, i.e. two games, one goal.
Yeah.
And he has that. I think if I'm correct in saying, his ratio is 0.45. So he's fairly decent. And he's 16th different injury. This one's a particular another muscular injury.
And how old is he? Early 20s.
Yes, he is a very young man. And it is nothing short of bad luck. I don't believe in this. Oh, it's the... Everyone talks Milanello, which is AC Milan's like hub, basically, yeah. And there's a big medical centre there. They blame them for these injuries, but I don't think so. But he's out again. Robinho today has just been announced that he's also out for a month. So really, after having lost those maybe they two, do need those on top of Ibrahimovic and Cassano,
yeah.
You know, they are all big losses. They've got El Shaarawy, who's also young. He's 19.
Mm.
He looks okay, but I think he's got the wrong attitude.
I mean, just going back to Niang, I mean, he was certainly is a big talent. He was 17 years old, and I know Arsenal looked at him.
Yeah, he was on trial. He was on trial at Arsenal.
Spurs were definitely interested in him. Everton were also very, very closely linked to him. You know, again, it's paper talk. I don't want to really dwell on it.
Well,
but
I know for a fact he actually had a trial at Arsenal.
Oh, and yeah, Spurs were interested in him, and it's a case of, you know, for me. From what I'm not going to proclaim to have seen much of him, but from the little I have seen and what I've read about him, it seems like he's got a really bright future ahead of him. I just hope that he doesn't go to AC Milan, Robinho and Pato get fit, and then he's sort of like fourth choice or something, which he will be. He's very young, but I mean, it's all right to be fourth choice this season when you're 17.
Yeah, but
in a few seasons' time when you're 21, 22, and you haven't really played, you'll be the next bloody Bojan, probably. Loaned out to Man City, or who knows?
Who knows? But yeah, so AC Milan have also declared that their transfer window is now shut.
Oh, they've got their own one.
They just said, we're doing no more dealings, says Galliani, which is stupid because they need more players, basically. Yeah. And that is why I think Allegri is going to get the chop sooner rather than later. Because
they don't have the players to get the results, and it's a sign.
If you don't win and you're a club like AC Milan,
yeah.
You're in Italy, it will always be the manager's fault. It won't matter because the man firing you is the man that says, I'm not going to buy any more players.
Yeah.
And he will just say, nah, it's the manager's fault.
Yeah.
And the new manager may come in, and come January, he'll say, oh, here's £50 million. Please spend it. Obviously, it won't because AC Milan's big thing was about levelling their books. But yes, sticking with Italy, Julius Cesar, obviously Inter Milan's technically currently on their books as their goalkeeper, is actually in London talking to QPR.
Yeah, almost certainly joining, isn't
it? Yes, and it makes you wonder what Rob Green was told when joining QPR to start with. He obviously signed on the pretense that you're going to be my number one goalie.
Of course, I think.
And I'd be a bit cheesed off, but at the same time,
I mean, at the same time, Julio Cesar is obviously a much better keeper than
Rob Green, and he's available. He's available, and you can get a Champions League winner only a couple of years ago, and he's only 31. He's a great keeper. You know, I'd understand if he was
on a free as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They won't be paying for him. I mean, they'll pay him his wages. Yeah, they'll pay his wages, and he'll be on a lot of money there. But if he comes in, he will certainly be their number one choice. And
I mean, to me, it sort of sums up QPR, though, because, I mean, as I said, I don't really want to lay into them anymore, but I've been really disappointed with how they've gone about their business. They seem to be bringing in players that will last them a year. I don't like that sort of short-termism in football. I think that sort of leads to Portsmouth Rangers situations.
I think they're on a survival.
Yeah, but, you know, Julio Cesar hasn't suddenly become available this week.
No,
Spurs were in talks with him over a month ago or so, you know. I know they brought in Rob Green really early, but to me, either you buy Rob Green, you bring him in, you make him your number one and you stick with him, or you look and you have a quick scout around Europe and go, oh, you know, Julio Cesar is actually available. Maybe we should just bring him in instead of Rob Green. Because if they brought Rob Green in as a number one, then he's on first team wages and Julio Cesar is going to be on big wages.
Yeah.
So now you've got Rob Green sitting on your bench, probably on what, 30, 40,000 a week?
I'd imagine no less.
Yeah. And it just makes no sense to me. And, you know, I know before I'd sort of upset any QPR fans, if there are any listening, their wage bill this season is lower than last season, apparently. There's sort of a big thing that they keep saying, and that's fair enough, but that's not necessarily...
That's not a good benchmark. Let's say we've done better than last year.
If last year was absolutely ridiculous.
You know, that's just like saying, oh, I only murdered four small children because last year I murdered six.
Yeah.
It's still not good.
Congrats, man.
Exactly, it's still not good.
Yeah, no, it's just a bit ridiculous, really. But a great signing if they get him.
Oh, yeah, if they manage to bring him in.
I would say I feel sorry for Rob Green, but I don't know him and I feel no sympathy towards him.
And another fairly large story in Italy is that Del Piero may be going to China to join Xion.
Oh, really?
They're in contact with his agent, who is also Del Piero's brother.
Yeah, old school.
Yeah, to try and talk him into joining the club, because Gattuso is there as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that's the way it's all panned out, and they're trying to get him in. And by the looks of it, Del Piero was quoted and said, oh, I'm looking for a new adventure and whatnot. Right. And he is going, because I am sure offers have been coming in from all kinds of clubs for Del Piero. A player of that class and quality could probably, and maybe not justifiably, command a lot of money. But he hasn't gone down that route from what I mean.
So where's he going? Switzerland, is this?
Xion.
Xion, and that's a Swiss team, right?
No, China.
I'm pretty sure they're Swiss, mate.
Sorry?
I'm pretty sure they're Swiss, aren't they? The one that Gattuso's at. I'm like 99% sure they're Swiss. Don't worry.
Yeah, no, they are Swiss, sorry.
We'll cut this bit out.
No. No, I've just absolutely lost my head there.
No.
They're the Swiss club, aren't they?
Yeah. Carry on.
Sorry about that. But...
I thought you said China.
I did say China. For some reason, I was thinking of what we were going to...
What we're moving touch on to. Next.
I thought I'd slide it in, and... Apologies there, but... he'll be playing there, and, you know, the league will be probably more at a pace that he'll be suited to.
I mean, I imagine he'll absolutely smash the Swiss league.
I presume so. I mean, he didn't play a lot last season. He came in at the back end and done really, really well. He was absolutely pivotal, which people probably glaze over for Juventus. He picked up some real crucial goals for them.
Oh, he's still...
I think he scored four...
Top-level goal scorer, isn't he? Really?
Four really important goals
in
big games, and best of luck to him, because he is an absolute... born champion, and I'm no doubt that he will, whatever he goes into, just be excellent.
Just a great man, isn't he? Really?
Yeah. So, staying in Europe, we're going to have a quick European roundup.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not? While we're here.
Do you want to kick it off? Shall I kick it off?
We'll go. Stay in Italy.
Yeah.
Or near the border.
Mm-hmm.
Near the border. Juventus. Obviously, continue their winning streak. They still haven't lost. They went the entirety of last season unbeaten and continued again with a 2-0 win.
And is Conte, what, in the stands at the moment? Is he allowed on the bench? Or...
Right. The deal with that is, once again, keeping it short, he is not allowed to be on the touchline for 10 months. He is allowed to train them. He just can't be with them day in the dressing room, basically. And, you know, people wondering how Juventus are going to deal, because he is quite a dominating figure on the touchline.
Right.
And in the Super Cup, they went down against Napoli, then come back and won it. So I don't think that's the right thing to say, but, you know, if your manager's not on the touchline and stuff like that is happening, you would like to think he'd be up there kicking ass.
And is he still, contesting it? Could it change, get reduced?
I don't think it will. I think they are really trying to make a big point out of this, even though I think it's incorrect for how severe it is. But
well, we won't go into that now.
That is besides the point.
We've got a long discussion.
Inter Milan obviously have had a great chance to win the luck I mentioned last week, and they got off to beating New Boys Pescara. And Cassano straight in, and him and Schneider are playing behind Melito, and it looks excellent. It really is. Cassano after the game just said it's just fun.
Yeah.
And when a player is enjoying their football, you probably see the best out
especially
of them.
Especially one like Cassano. I mean, emotions sort of ruling quite a lot.
Yeah, and there's no doubt. Everyone knows he's always been a great player, and I think we're going to really see a good Inter this season, and Stramaccioni's been excellent in employing his new system, new way of thinking into this team. And I've said it before, Juventus are only going to be pushed this season, I believe, by Inter. Mm. AC Milan lost to Sampdoria at home, first game of the season. Mm. They got their lowest ever level of season ticket sales in... But since Berlusconi's bought the club.
People aren't impressed with Silva and Ibra leaving.
Well, when they sold those two, they offered refunds instantly. Yeah. Which shows
did
just
a lot of people
pure,
take it up, I guess?
I don't actually know, but the fact that the club have put that offer out there can't be any more pessimistic.
They're obviously aware of how influential those two players are.
Oh, yeah, of course they are. You sell your two best players.
Yeah.
But don't just say, oh, we're going to give you your money back.
Cassano's gone as well.
Yeah, Cassano's gone partly as a result and falling out with the coaching staff. Mm. But it's massively like that. And if you sell your best players and don't do anything about replacing them, what messages are you sending out to A, your players internally, and B, your fan base?
I don't know, man. They've got Bojan here. He's going to be sick.
Right, okay. And last team that I want to touch on is Roma, who got their league campaign underway, and the new manager, Zeman.
Zeman. Yep.
The more you learn about him, the more you will love him. The man is excellent. He is
smoked
just...
like 80 a day,
doesn't he? Yeah, he is... You think of an old Italian... Or say a Serie A manager who's not actually Italian, but you know, back in the day when you used to see Lippi up on the touchline of his cigar, Zeman's very much like that with his cigarettes, and he's a big smoker, and he's all about attacking football. None of this defending nonsense.
Yeah.
It is just keep going. After the game, he wasn't happy with Totti not being in the box enough, and Totti's kind of recently had to change his game, come back, and he plays in the hole, just excellent. I absolutely love watching him there. I think he's so smart. Just his feet are beautiful. But Roma, certainly the ground is in there, and they scored two exceptional goals. Osvaldo scored a bicycle kick, which this time was not ruled out for offside. People said it was similar to the one that he scored at the back end of last season, which was incorrectly ruled out for offside, which was one of the best bicycle kicks I've seen. With just the technique was beautiful. This one was a bit of a, I say a lazy man's bicycle kick. You still have to jump in the air and and perform said move. But it was a great goal, but wasn't as good as the one against Lecce. And Nicolas Lopez scored. He sombreroed, the ball come over to him, he sombreroed the defender and volleyed it in.
Lovely.
At the near post, beating the goalie at the near post as well. It was pretty good.
It's always nice to see.
I don't know what I prefer. I think I'd rather have scored Lopez's goal. I think there's a bit more continuity in the skill level that you have to just keep there. Keeping a cool head. After sombreroing a player, all you want to do is just lace it. You wouldn't care if it goes into the stands because you'd be like, did you see that? I've just done him. But yeah, Roma 2-2 against Catania. But good things are coming, I reckon.
It's nice to see. I think a lot of people still have this stereotypical view of Italian football being very defensive and very boring.
It's
not really like that anymore.
Not at all.
Especially with someone like Zeman there, who's all about attacking football. I think it's going to be a very exciting league to watch this season.
He's a great league to watch.
I mean, I think you only had to watch, you know, for people who do have that opinion, you only had to watch Chelsea-Napoli last season to see it's not like that
anymore. I mean, I won't get onto Napoli play Palermo, you know, Derby of the South and whatnot, and...
800 stabbings.
Hamsik got a cracker as well. But, well, I pity the fool, as a great man once said, who does not watch Serie A. And sticking with Europe, another league that we love.
España.
Is it La Liga?
La Liga. So just going to sort of give you a quick roundup of the games that most people will be interested in, I imagine. Barcelona won 2-1 to make it two wins from two and put them top of the table. But actually, you know, they're playing Osasuna, who Osasuna obviously beat Barcelona last season. It was sort of like one of the big results of
the
season.
It was the big shock, wasn't it?
Probably like the big result of the season, because a loss is, like, a draw is a loss over there
for one of the two big teams.
So
the gap already between Madrid and Barcelona is something that people often talk about as being just is an unforgivable gap.
Two games into
league's finished, pack up, go home.
But that, honestly, when Osasuna beat Barcelona last season, that was it. A lot of people were like, that's it, it's done now. But so they won 2-1 Barcelona, but again, not actually very convincing at all.
I didn't see the game, but what I've heard once again from it is Barcelona unimpressive, But we have the best player in the world.
But Messi got two goals. But they were two late goals, 76th and then the 80th minute. And the second one coming after Osasuna player got sent off. But, you know, the second goal was great. It was a lovely cross from Jordi Alba. A great finish from Messi. But the first one, a little bit controversial. The ref sort of got in the way of Osasuna players in the centre of the pitch. Messi took advantage, sort of ran through, scored. So, you know, winning, but certainly not winning convincingly. Certainly not at their best. But, you know, it's early days.
And what is most important is 3 points on the board.
3 points, which, unfortunately for Real Madrid, they can't say. Real Madrid lost 2-1 to Getafe. Actually, the day before they signed Modric, and a lot of very cynical people in the Spanish press
were saying it got pushed through and announced to kind of cover it up.
You know, oh, we lost, but don't worry, we've brought in this player. Which could very well be true. But yeah, I mean, Real Madrid, you know, very unimpressive. Not to say they necessarily deserve to lose. Watching the game, I was very surprised that Getafe, when they scored and then scored again, I was a bit like, oh, God.
Yeah, you had a bit of a wager on the game as well.
Yeah, a little bit of money lost, so wasn't the happiest of boys. Usually betting on Barca or Real is a pretty safe bet. But yeah, you know, I don't think Madrid necessarily played badly. Probably not played any worse than Barcelona played. But the fact is that they lost 2-1 and Barcelona won 2-1. And after two games, they're 3 points behind Barcelona, yeah. Which, as I said, in La Liga, for the two top teams, a draw is as significant as a loss, really. So a loss is just unheard of. And especially, you know, this early in the season, we probably shouldn't be losing. Yeah. It wasn't that they didn't have the chances.
As we say, time will tell, but in the past two seasons, certainly.
It could be that this year is different and the mid-level teams start taking points off them.
But what we've seen, the precedent for the past few seasons with these two teams, not by name, but actually by a set of team, being a team, they don't drop points either side, really. It's uncharacteristic of them to drop points.
Yeah, of course.
You know, they may be humanised, so to speak. They may be
brought down to a level where they can be reached and beaten, or at least.
But with what we mentioned earlier, with this financial worries, even the better teams are forced to sell. I mean, I remember when Valencia were forced to sell Silva, Villa.
I mean, yeah, Valencia would have like an unreal team if they'd have kept hold of players. You know, you look at Atletico Madrid and they had Aguero, they had Torres, you know. I mean, those two together would have been disgustingly good.
But
yeah, that's the problem, is that, you know, the other teams are so far behind that they're sort of forced to sell these players generally to Barcelona, Real Madrid. But yeah, I mean, they weren't happy about it. Obviously not, you know, losing away to Getafe, a game, although away from home, the way the Spanish league is, they would have thought they would comfortably win it. Fabio Contrao got sent off from being on the bench.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just lovely to see. So yeah, you know, it'll be interesting. It's obviously such early days, but La Liga is so different from the Premier League that I don't think you can go, oh, we'll judge it after eight games, because you can for most teams, but if you're talking about Barcelona and Real Madrid,
that head-to-head
it's a case of those eight games should be win. So it's very interesting to see a loss this early in the season. You know, we'll see how things work out. The final game I just want to touch on, Atletico Madrid played Athletic Bilbao.
A game really for the football lovers out there, because they are two teams that are they're very nice to watch.
Two fantastic teams, great to watch. And a surprisingly, or perhaps unsurprisingly, one-sided result. Atletico Madrid won 4-0. Falcao was in imperious form. He looked incredible with a very solid hat-trick. You know, always nice to see, but I mean, he looked unplayable, to be honest.
Well, he is, though, isn't he?
When he's on form, you know, he's such, you know, such a skillful player, but also so physical that it becomes, you know, how do you stop him, really? But yeah, I mean, I think the problem came from Athletic Bilbao. I mean, they looked completely downhearted. At the moment, Llorente's not playing, Javi Martinez not playing, both of them saying they're not signing new contracts, so Bielsa's, I think he's not letting them even train with the first team. He's certainly not involving them in match days. So it's not even that you've lost your two best players. It's also the morale that, you know, they're still around.
Saying, I don't want to play for it.
And
the
morale looked very low, I'll be honest, in the game.
That's a shame to see, because You know, it's such an exciting young team. You really want to see.
You wanted to see them all kept together,
just blossom, and just become an absolutely fantastic team to watch. But
yeah, Atletico Madrid, 4 points from two games. Barcelona, Valladolid, and Rayo Vallecano, top of the table, all on 6 points from two games. And that is La Liga summarised for you.
Yeah, moving on. Finally, we're going to touch on Ligue 1. That is the French league. As Tom is
Ligue
1. Is getting on at.
Yep.
I watched the Paris Saint-Germain for the first time since all their new arrivals with, you know, I was quite interested to see how it would pan out, you know, great manager, great players, and it was horrible. I was so horrible to watch, and I don't even know how to say, disjointed, poor. They do look like, well, they look like what they are. They're a team of players have just been kind of whacked in together, trying to get the best out. Just say get the best out of them, and I think Ibra's got a thing to where he goes. It kind of becomes about him.
The Ibra show,
and he's very capable of doing it. He can pull out a game and salvage a team on his own.
Yeah,
but you know what can you do when? I'm not saying it's everyone's fault, but his.
Yeah.
But it just the way they were playing, he was trying to do certain things.
No one's really on his wavelength.
There were times he was just dropping a feint, letting the ball run around him, but the other players already darted into the box.
Right. Is that a case of, you know,
I think too much once too again, soon? It will possibly come in time, but 3 draws out of 3 now for a team that people were kind of happy to lump on a lot of money and think they're going to get.
Well, people were saying, you know, they'll win every single game.
Such a safe bet. There's no point having your money in the bank. Just bet it on PSG because you'll probably get a better rate of return. You know, people were that sure about it. And there's nothing saying that they're not going to win the next 30-odd games.
Yeah,
I can't see it happening. Ancelotti last week lost his shit. That's why I was quite interested to watch it, because he was really angry. He got sent off into the stands, but they were scoring. This time was a 0-0, and it didn't look like there was anything there.
But I think, you know, it's easy from an outside perspective to think, you just see the results, and you go, oh, well, it must just be all these French teams completely sitting back against PSG.
Oh, no,
because
PSG they're so good. Just didn't look, like that at all. They just didn't look good.
You know, the teams, one of the teams they played in their first few games did do that, but two of them really attacked PSG had them under pressure. Week. Yeah,
you know, Bordeaux are a big club.
Yeah, and they didn't just sit back.
They weren't going for it.
Yeah.
And they've got a good goalkeeper in them, PSG, and, you know, they've signed Silva along with everybody else. But, you know, for the minute, that is just not clicking.
It's interesting to keep an eye on that and see
how it really is, because
how it pans out.
The French league is and always has been one of those breeding grounds for excellent players, and it's always nice to see them flourish before they hit the main stage, because you really get a better understanding of them, I feel.
Of course.
But now, with PSG trying to kind of come in and take an absolute
stranglehold.
I was going to say, they're going to come in.
They're trying to do what Man City did if there were
no
other
teams
in the Premier League.
So that's what they've tried to do, and it will come in time, but it may be this season.
Yeah.
But the French League is bloody crazy, because the team that won it last year, Montpellier, famously, their budget was under 30 million, and obviously PSG are sort of in players for that.
Well, I think PSG spent like 70% of League
One's
transfer
yeah,
fees.
Yeah, it is through them, yeah.
Mental.
And that is insane.
That is crazy.
And they've made a lot of signings. You know?
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
not like 4 signings and they've made 2 of them for big money. It is like that. But Montpellier, who did win the league last season, are currently sitting at the bottom, which is, it's crazy to think, you know.
Yeah.
I know they've lost.
So, yeah, it's obviously
but,
like 3 games in, but still, yeah.
You know, you just can't. It's as if Man City. You're not saying not Man City. That's a terrible example, because they've got you know, it wasn't a surprise that they won the league, but it's as if they started off poorly. You know, it's just up and down in that league. And we'll see how it goes, but PSG for the minute really, really don't look like they're going to be doing much. So, yeah.
Well, I think that's probably all we got time for this week.
I think that is all we have time for this week.
A couple of things we wanted to touch on didn't get a chance to move on to, so I'll probably link a couple of articles up on Twitter later if people
we'll try and get some stuff sent out.
Just want to finish off by saying, Garth Crooks, as always, you are a complete fucking moron. Don't pick a team of the week and put Stephen Pienaar and Eden Hazard as holding midfielders in a 4-2-3-1. Maybe don't pick Raheem Sterling on the left just because he's young. And probably don't put Martin Skrtel as your centre-back when he gave away 3 points at home. Okay, you're a dickhead.
Well, cheers, Garth.
Thanks, Garth, for making us all look like we know what we're talking about.